This is URN Sport.
Hello and welcome along. I think we can call this the Premier League show. I think this is the first time Premier League football has been discussed on a Saturday by URN Sport for the first time in about 3 months, I think it's fair to say. Delighted to be joined by Matt, Benji and Jez as we talk about the Premier League's long-awaited return. It's coming back after a 100-day hiatus. It returns on the 17th of June, and the first 32 matches after the restart have been announced. All of the remaining 92 games that will be taking place are going to be broadcast live, whether that's going to be on Sky, BT, BBC or on Amazon. Of course, all these Premier League fixtures will be taking place behind closed doors, which has been a controversial move, but I think with the success of the Bundesliga's returning and of course, the effect which the coronavirus has had on the country, I think people can agree that if football's going to come back, that's probably the safest way to do it. But before we talk about the logistics of that, it's been 100 days, like I said, since the Premier League, since the 2019-2020, the last round of matches. So I thought I would test the panel tonight on their knowledge about the season. Who would like to go first? Who'd like to have the first question? I'm going to go to Benji first, actually. Now, I will warn everybody in advance, this is very obscure knowledge about the 2019-2020 season. Forget league positions, forget goals, forget assists. This is all about the obscure stats that, if you were a true Premier League fanatic, you would know. So, Benji, question number one I'm going to turn to you is, which club has scored the most own goals in the 2019-2020 season so far? Is it A, Aston Villa? Is it B, Bournemouth? Or is it C, Norwich?
I don't think it's Norwich. I think I'm going to go with A, Aston Villa.
You're going to go Aston Villa. How many own goals would you say that they've scored this season then?
Four.
You're going to go for four. Jez and Matt, what do you think about that answer?
My gut says Bournemouth.
You're going to go for Bournemouth?
Yeah, I'm thinking okay. Bournemouth.
So how many own goals do you think Bournemouth?
I reckon Bournemouth have conceded six.
Six own goals this season, okay.
I think four's a good shout from Ben, but Villa with four. I can just see Tyrone Mings like them bouncing off him and going in. But I would go Bournemouth and four.
Well, I'm afraid that all three of you are wrong about both the club and the amount of own goals. Norwich have scored the most own goals this season, but only with two, and those own goals were by Tim Krul and Grant Hanley. So Norwich have scored the most on goals.
Good shout.
Not a good start. And Matt, I'm going to turn to you now for question two. Which of the following goalkeepers has saved a penalty kick this season? A, David De Gea. B, Jordan Pickford. Or C, Rui Patricio.
Well, Jordan Pickford has been in terrible form, but then he does like some weird wonder save now and then. I think if I can remember. I reckon I'm going to go with Jordan Pickford.
You know Jordan Pickford? Benji's nodding his head. Do you agree?
I'm
going
to go with Rui Patricio because I think, unless I've gone crazy, I think I can remember him saving a penalty this season.
Jez, what are you saying?
Who's the first option again?
De Gea.
No, De Gea definitely hasn't. Oh, I'm saying that he's not going to end up being the one. I'd go Patricio as well. This is two for two. I'm agreeing with Ben. This is really worrying, but I do agree with Ben. I think I have a odd memory of Patricio saving. I think you put Pickford in there because he's done that for England.
Both Benji and Jez are correct. Rui Patricio is the answer to that question. He saved two penalty kicks this season for Wolves, actually. De Gea and Pickford have saved none, which is very interesting. Right, question number three, Jez. We're going to turn to you for this one.
Pascal Gross.
Which Premier League player has been substituted on the most this season? So which player has come off the bench the most this season? And I'm not giving you any options for this, either.
Oh, you. Can I have, if you've got options?
Yes, I have got options. So
yes, please, in that case.
Shane Long, A. Divock Origi, B. Or C, Mason Greenwood?
All three of those are good shouts.
Were those three? I actually was going to say as my answer anyway, so.
I'm going to Greenwood.
You're going to go Greenwood, Matt? Was that the name you were thinking of?
No, I was thinking of Shane Long.
Yeah.
Shane Long, okay. Benji?
I think of Shane Long, but I think I'm going to go with Jez, actually. I'll return his trust in me to him.
Well, Jez is... talking of substitutions, Jez is coming for Alex Duke, isn't he?
He is, yes, he is. Duke and Dalal Dream Team, Room United here. I have to say, both Benji and Jez were right again. Mason Greenwood has been substituted on the most this season, 18 times. Divock Origi, 17 times. And I believe Shane Long is about 12 times has come off the bench this season. Moyes Kane,
I think he starts a lot. That's the thing which sort of threw me.
Right, let's go back to you then, Benji. So we've found out which Premier League player has been substituted on the most this season. Which Premier League player has been substituted off the most out of these three players? Is it A, Iosi Perez of Leicester? Is it B, Harry Wilson of Bournemouth? Or is it C, Joel Linton of Newcastle?
What was A again?
Iosi Perez.
I think I'm going to go with Iosi Perez.
Yeah, Perez. Matt, what are you thinking about that one?
Yeah, I'm thinking Perez as well.
Perez, Jez?
I mean, I'm thinking Perez, but I think to keep things interesting, I won't go with Perez. Who was the second one? Because I don't think it's Joe Linton.
Harry Wilson of Bournemouth.
Yeah, all right, I'll take a punt on Harry. I'll take a punt on one of Liverpool's own.
You're going to go Harry Wilson. Well, I have to say, it's very, very close. Joe Linton has been substituted, has been taken off 16 times this season. Harry Wilson has been taken off 17 times, and Iosi Perez has been taken off 18 times. So that is the correct answer. Well done, everybody.
On the board.
Two more questions to go then of this exciting quiz. Question number five. Which club has hit the woodwork the most this season, Matt? I'm not giving you options for this one because it's a club-based one.
I'm going to go with Manchester United.
You're going to go Man United. How many times are you going to say that do you think they've hit the woodwork this season?
27.
Jez, let's turn to you. What do you think the answer to that one is?
That's a very good shout with United, because I can just think of all their penalties that just sort of seem to hit the woodwork.
Yeah, but United always seem to sort of have like some long-range shot that hits the crossbar. I don't know. It's just their image.
I don't think it's Liverpool, even though I could say that for argument's sake. I don't think it's Everton, because I don't think you take that many shots.
No. Maybe we don't. They go over the bar, not on.
I don't think City, because City take a lot of because City's shots are more clinical. You know, I'm also going to go with United, and I'll say 26.
You're going to go 26, Benji?
Look, I know I have a feeling the answer's United, and I'm going to be very boring and go with United, but I'll say 24 times.
Okay. I'm a trendsetter, that's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Okay. Well, unfortunately, Matt, your trend was incorrect. The club which has hit the woodwork most this season is Manchester City. So, right city, wrong club, but Man City have hit it 19 times this season.
Do you know where United were?
United, should I go and find out for you now?
I think you should, James.
Let's have a look on the Premier League website. Right. In the meantime, you, as I look for the answer to this, you can mull over the final question of the quiz. Which club has the most offsides this season?
Ooh.
I think I know, but I'm going to keep this.
I've heard this, and I can't remember who it is now. So that's completely useless information there.
That's such a classic, like, answer to a pub quiz. Oh, I know this, but I just can't name it.
Man United have hit the bar 12 times this season, Matt. 12 times this season. So not far off. What club are you thinking, Jez?
It's either someone that plays a lot on the counter or someone that pings up a long ball fast. I mean, this is classic. So, if the question was this... Because if the question was which team's probably had the most offsides against, I'm pretty certain it's Liverpool. Because I think of that high line that we were playing. I'm going to go Wolves.
You're going to go Wolves, Benji? Oh, actually, you think you know what it is, so we'll turn to Matt.
I'm probably going to be wrong, but I'm going to say Arsenal because I think Lacazette gets caught offside like probably six times a game.
Okay. Matt, what are you saying?
I'm going to say Leicester City.
You're going to say Leicester City? Well, all three clubs are wrong. I'm going to let you have another. I'm going to let you have another go at it.
Just 17 left to pick from.
I'm going to let you have another go at it, but Jez made a really good point there. A club that's going to be offside a lot, it's either fast moving in behind or lots of balls being pinged forward. Especially think about the latter.
Is it Liverpool?
It's not Liverpool, no.
Aston Villa.
It's not Aston Villa. Jez, final guess for you.
All right, I was going to say we've only got 15 teams left to pick from. I'll go City then in that case. So I can City.
Unfortunately, it's not Manchester City. The club with the most offsides in the Premier League 2019 to 2020 is Burnley. They've been caught offside 69 times this season. So, lads, I think that's a very disappointing effort all round in tonight's Premier League quiz. And they were really obvious questions as well. Everyone knows which club has been the offside the most this season. But I think we need to rub up. We need to refine our knowledge of the Premier League before the restart comes into play. But yeah, like I was saying before we went into that quiz, the Premier League returns on the 17th of June. It's been away for 100 days. All of the remaining 92 games are going to be broadcast via Sky, BT, BBC, or Amazon. Amazon and the BBC, they are having four games each, whereas Sky and BT are kind of having the main share of the Premier League fixtures. Sky are going to show a few games for free, and then there are a few others that you have to pay membership to access. The first game back is a Titanic clash between Aston Villa and Sheffield United, 6 p.m. On Sky Sports on Wednesday.
0-0 written all over it.
Has got a 0-0 written all over it.
My back wild.
It's going to be, of course, behind closed doors. Although there is some talk of neutral venues, which we're going to come on to in a moment. Deputy Chief Constable Mark Roberts came out a few weeks ago to say that up to six matches could be moved for public health reasons, and that includes potentially the Merseyside Derby, which is taking place in that first round of fixtures. Matt, I'm going to turn to you first. I mean, just a real general question. Are you excited for this, you know, kind of festival of football to be coming back?
Yes and no. Because yes, in the sense that it's going to be really good to see live sport. No, in the sense that it won't be the same, because I feel, from what I've seen of the Bundesliga, the lack of the crowd, I do think, impacts the atmosphere and the sort of intensity of the game. And it's interesting as well, I saw some stats coming out of the Bundesliga that home advantage is sort of really undone a lot by the lack of a crowd. Like, the percentage of times the home team wins is down quite a lot, I think. So I think that's going to actually... that does make it a bit more interesting, because I guess, theoretically, that shows who's the best team, doesn't it? Because, you know, they're just playing basically on a training ground, aren't they? I know it's like, obviously, I have like 30,000 seats around them, but they are essentially playing in front of just the coaching staff. So that's going to be a really interesting aspect of it. Obviously, you know, for obvious reasons, you can't have 30,000 people in the stadium right now. So that completely makes sense. I think it should hopefully be good for people in terms of morale, and hopefully it'll mean people stay at home more if they're just sitting watching football. I don't know. But the first thing I'd say is please don't go around to your friend's house to watch the football.
Yeah, very true, very true. URN Sport promoting the public health message there. Benji, I'll turn to you. It kind of has this weird, it feels like an extremely weird improvised World Cup, doesn't it, that you've got all of these fixtures taking place at once, all on these different channels and what have you. I mean, what's your general feeling about the Premier League coming back? Are you excited? Are you a bit nervous for Arsenal, or is it a bit of both?
It's a mixture of both feelings, to be honest. It's a great way to put it. It's like a sort of World Cup style in the summer, but I do feel that I am very excited for it to come back until we start losing. And the first game is Manchester City. And that is not the first game you want to see on any calendar. But yeah, what makes me even more scared is apparently reports from the Arsenal training ground suggest they are all raring to come back and play. And that can only spell out a disaster. But having said that all, I'm looking forward. I don't have much expectations. I'm behind Arteta, and I hope he can like salvage us something from what has been a pretty appalling season.
And Jez, I kind of want to build on one of Matt's points that he made a moment ago about home advantage. We're going to talk about Liverpool in a little bit more depth in a moment, but the Bundesliga has kind of proved that it doesn't matter where you play, really. It's who's better on the day that kind of wins. As you know, a Liverpool fan who's really in the throes of well, I say a title race, but it's very much in Liverpool's hands now. How much of an effect do you think the idea of behind closed doors is going to play on for Liverpool? And from what you've seen, Jurgen Klopp's come out and made a couple of comments about Liverpool being ready, being prepared. You know, there's been footage of training behind closed doors. It looks like Liverpool are as sharp as ever. Do you think there's going to be a natural difference to Liverpool's game when they come back, or are you expecting the same kind of heavy metal football team that was dominating the Premier League only a few months ago to return?
Well, the point you make about the Bundesliga is really vital for that, because I think I remember on Bail Me Out, Callum mentioned that I think by the third week, basically, the Bundesliga returning, there'd only been four home victories. So three rounds of fixtures, you only had four home wins, didn't look great. I think if you'd asked me, would I expect the same heavy metal brand of football last season or the season before, I probably would have said no, because Liverpool this season haven't been pressing as much as they have in previous seasons. It's sort of been more, I can't remember what it, I think it's called like situational press or something like that, where they're being more measured with it. And yeah, Liverpool were the first team to do a full squad training game within their home stadium. Tottenham, I think, have done one either today or yesterday is the first one I've seen. I don't know if other teams have been doing them, but I haven't seen other teams doing them. Those are the only two teams I've noticed starting to do them. So that's promising. You know, there's been a lot of seemingly quite upbeat, positive promotional stuff coming out of Liverpool throughout the whole of the build-up. The squad sort of made sure that it kept in touch with the fans, the community. It all seemed pretty positive. However, and this is a big however, when there was a 1 week dip in the fact that we had, you know, the winter break, which, you know, was a 2 week short break that we seemed to have in the league, and that had what it did. Liverpool came back, and the game we had after that was, I don't think it was immediately, but two games after we came back was Watford. So not overly confident. I think it's going to probably be almost like how you'd see it, Liverpool start at the start of a season, in that they're probably going to be rusty, they're probably going to be getting up to speed, and I don't quite think they're going to hit the full stride. So for you guys, obviously, Everton with the first game, it's probably not a bad time to be taking Liverpool on in that regard. Similar to how I'd actually say to Ben, you know, I would love to play City at this point, because Pep Guardiola will have been sat in his room for about 3 months with not able to do any football. And Pep apparently goes bananas when he can't do football for a week. Like he's, you know, you see all the twitching he does. He's going to come out for this game in City, and I hope that he's playing some bonkers formation and just, you know, I will play Joao Cancelo as a left winger or something stupid. I really hope that it's all some Pep weirdness. But at the same time, yeah, I don't know. I hope that it's been a good refresh for quite a few players. So I think that's sort of something that's needed, but now it's going to be a bit of a test for a lot of them.
It'd be interesting, though, you know, the point you were making about Guardiola there, I mean, I actually think on a serious point, it would be interesting to see how certain managers tactically go about it. Because if you think, for example, Newcastle under Steve Bruce, I mean, they've got a relatively good home record and have won a lot of games late on through. And they've scored so many set piece goals. I think they've got the most in the league and the most goals. I think it's from a back four. Their back four have scored the majority of their goals this season. And you can tell their game plan at St James's Park is get to the second half, get towards the Gallagher end and kind of play a high press game that kind of gets the fans on top of you, and they act as almost as your 12th man. So without those supporters in the stadium, it'd be interesting to see how, you know, an example that their team goes about the business. And kind of on a similar point, Matt, we're going to talk in a little bit more detail about the relegation battle in a minute. But if you're a club like Aston Villa, Bournemouth, Norwich, Watford, who are kind of stuck in the mire at the bottom, and, you know, they've got some really important home games coming up, the lack of supporters in the ground, I think for them particularly, surely that's going to have an effect on them. Positive or negative, that's for you to decide, but surely it's going to have an impact on those teams fighting for their lives at the bottom.
Well, it's been something that's been raised by a lot of the bottom clubs, the lack of home support, because obviously that's such a key factor. I guess there's sort of the argument that, well, they're all in the same boat now because none of them are going to have home support. It's, I guess, if you were doing, and it's not like there's an outbreak in Brighton, so Brighton AP will not having home fans. So they're all in the same boat, I guess. And it's the same for someone like Liverpool, who've got such a formidable atmosphere and feel they have to sort of find a way to get around it. I just wanted to make a point when you were saying about the set pieces, James. One interesting thing, I don't have the exact stat, but in the Bundesliga, a lot more goals have been scored from set pieces than normal, as far as I can remember, because basically defenders haven't had the same time to rehearse the way they're approaching them. So I think that could be something that, you know, on a very crude level, could benefit the lower teams if they tend to be more direct in their style of play. So that'd be interesting to see whether that has an impact on the style of games. You know, if you think about teams that aren't as strong in the air, they might struggle a bit more. So that'll be interesting to see whether that's a factor in play. But I think it's good that the football's being played, because even if it's not in the same conditions or whatever, then at least, like, for somebody to be relegated with about 10 games to go on points per game would be a bit rubbish. So I'm glad that's not happening. Although it worked very well in League Two, where Swindon actually are finishing champions.
What? I was wondering how long it was going to take before that was mentioned, to be fair. So you've got it in slightly earlier than I thought. But we'll give you a round of applause at the end for Richie Welland's achievement.
Thank you. I actually got a round of applause from on a pub quiz I did last week for Swindon winning the league, which was.
Oh, did you?
And I was like, well, you know, I have a lot to do with it. Going.
Yeah, you were the mastermind.
Exactly.
Benji, I mentioned it a little bit earlier about the fact that all of these games are going to be broadcast, the majority of which free the BBC showing top flight football for the first time since 1987 to 1988. Amazon will be showing free Premier League games as well. They did so over Christmas. I mean, that's one thing I think, to be fair, broadcasters, I've got to be applauded a little bit, because it would have been really easy in this kind of context for a company to jump on it and see it as a really good opportunity to establish some kind of a paywall which prevented you from watching the game. So, I mean, from a football fan's point of view, it's worked out really well, and those companies deserve a little bit of credit, don't they, for broadcasting these games for free.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with you. I'm glad that, like, in a time of, like, sadness, and they're giving the fans the ability to watch these games and keep football fans distracted from what's going on. And, yeah, I'm very excited to... for games to come back, and I feel we all need that right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Final point kind of on the general return of the Premier League. Jez, I'm going to turn to you here. And that's, I mentioned it a little bit earlier, the idea of potential neutral venues. Now, the Merseyside Derby is yet to be confirmed, the venue for that fixture, which is part of the first round of games. There are fears, of course, that there potentially could be fans congregating outside the ground because of the magnitude of the fixture. There are also issues with kind of spikes in levels of infection and Premier League authorities wanting to move the games elsewhere. What are your kind of thoughts on this whole neutral venues debate? Because Liverpool coming to Goodison Park, it's something they've been used to for many years. Those players are adjusted to it now. But let's say it has to move to a neutral venue, say Manchester City or Manchester United, it's definitely going to change the dynamic of the game a little bit. What's your opinion upon this idea of neutral venues, and do you think they will go ahead?
Well, I really hope they don't, actually, to be honest. I think we've seen the Bundesliga just having it at the fixed stadium or at their own stadium does work. I think it is something which can be done. I feel that if the argument put forward by Liverpool's mayor, who I won't grace by saying his name, is that because he thinks Liverpool fans will just go out and to celebrate the title, then I think that's a bit flawed because, the Merseyside derby is one game that's possibly being moved to a neutral venue. However, the game in between, because the first sort of bulk of fixtures has been released and confirmed, the game in between the Merseyside derby and Liverpool's trip to Manchester for taking on Man City is Crystal Palace at home, which again, feasibly, mathematically, could be a game that Liverpool win the league in, and yet there's been no talk about moving that game. So it's obviously that it's a little bit not quite showing his full hand here. Because I don't quite know, it's possibly not something that, if you live in the region, I'm back at home with my parents in the Northwest, there's a lot of stuff quite often on the evening news with Liverpool's mayor making a lot of these rather untasteful comments, I think I'll phrase it like that, towards what he thinks Liverpool fans, which I'm surprised if he's going to enter re-election. So I won't go into a full political rant about it, but I think he lost quite a bit of credibility when half his cabinet ended up being done for social distancing. So from Liverpool's perspective, there does seem to be an awful lot of these games, and initially the first package, which are being pushed into the neutral venues. I, like I said, don't like the idea of neutral venues. I think for Everton's point of view, if I was in your situation, James, I'd feel that this is it's unfair for you guys that you're having to then move out of Goodison to play this one game when you've already played at Anfield twice this season. So it's a bit, you guys are owed a match at Goodison.
Yeah, I think because my kind of feeling on it is Everton's only real chance of beating Liverpool, in my opinion, is in front of a full packed Goodison. Basically, right. In my opinion, you have to. If you look at the Merseyside derby at Goodison last season, Everton came into in garbage form. I mean, you were there, I was there, and it finished 0-0. And Everton could have quite easily nicked it late on.
You were the better team, annoyingly.
Definitely, and that shouldn't happen. But I genuinely think that is, going back to Matt's point about home advantage. I think that's where it played into Everton's hands. So I think at the very least, it should be played on Everton soil, if you know what I mean. But we will see about that, because that hasn't been decided as of yet, and it does seem that in more recent days the Premier League kind of seems like they're going to move more towards it going to be played at normal home grounds, but we'll have to wait and see in regards to that.
But the clock's ticking on it. That's the only other thing.
Yeah, exactly.
I just think in terms of public health concerns, when you've got thousands of people crowding onto beaches in Southend and Dorset, I feel like maybe 50 fans might make turning up and getting dispersed by the police is the least of your worries. I think it's insulting to football fans. It's to sort of stigmatise them as a group in that way, that they are going to turn up to be outside, because, to be honest, I don't think many of them would, because if, obviously we have a Liverpool fan and an Everton fan here, presumably you'd want to watch the game, so you'd be at home to watch the game on TV. Why would you bother turning up to go outside the stadium when you're not going to get let in and probably dispersed by the police?
Well, there's nothing to do when you're outside the ground. It's not like pubs are going to be open for you to go and celebrate afterwards or anything like that. It's kind of like a pointless exercise. But we'll see what comes in regards to that. In terms of that's kind of like the administrative stuff of the Premier League's return kind of put to bed. In terms of the football itself, which is kind of, I think, the main thing that we wanted to talk about tonight, we'll talk about Liverpool and the title race in a moment, mainly because I can't bring myself to talk about it. There are kind of two other areas of the league where I think there is a lot to discuss, and that's in regards to qualification for the Champions League and also in regards to the relegation battle. Has anyone got a preference as to what they'd like to talk about first, the bottom or the top four?
Let's get the bottom done first.
Let's get the bottom done first, Benji. You're quite right, too. So as it stands, there is a gap between... Norwich currently find themselves bottom of the table. 21 games... 21... not 21 games played, sorry. 21 points they've picked up so far this season. They find themselves on 21 points. Watford, who are 17th at the minute, they're on 27 points, the same amount as Bournemouth. Who currently find themselves 18th in the Premier League. So there's a six-point gap there. In terms of Norwich's fixtures, they've got Southampton in the next cluster of games, I should say. They've got Southampton, Everton, and Manchester United in a venue which is yet to be confirmed. Those previous two games are both at Carrow Road. And then they play Arsenal away on what is supposed to be the 1st of July. 21 points. Like I said, a six-point gap between themselves and Watford, who are currently in 17th place. Matt, is that too? Is it a bridge too far for Norwich now with what? Nine, 10 games remaining. Is it too much for them, do you think?
I think yes is probably the easy answer. Obviously, sounds obvious, and we sort of alluded to this already. Things have been changed by obviously coronavirus and the sort of return behind closed doors. So we don't know exactly how that's going to affect each team and how each team is going to sort of benefit from that or be hindered by that. So that means that they're probably in a better position now because they've sort of got that sort of joker up their sleeve. They can now play that everything's been reset. So they can sort of say, right, this is now a 10-game season and we're starting on sort of like a minus points if we've been financially deducted or something. So we just have to go for it from that. So they've got more of a chance that way. And obviously, you know, it's difficult to measure the toughness of fixtures because we don't know which teams have had the best sort of training, you know. Obviously, no team's going to come out and be like, well, our training's been awful. But, you know, if Liverpool and co. have been getting more games behind closed doors, then they'll probably be slightly sharper. And those sort of mind differences will make a huge, huge difference at this level. So I think the short answer is, yes, it probably is too far. But also, it's sport, anything can happen. And yeah. And obviously, we don't know if I think Troy Deeney is back in training now, but we don't know if any other players will take sort of the stance he took about playing. You know, it could be a big name that doesn't end up
Kante
playing.
Kante did, I think. I think he's back training, yeah.
Yeah.
I saw him pictured with Callum.
With hair.
It's going to be interesting, that actually, because of whether any other players coming for. That kind of don't take part as a result of the wider context. Above Norwich in the table, we find Aston Villa, who are on 25 points. Their cluster of games coming up are quite difficult, I think it's fair to say. They've got Sheffield United at home. That's the first game back at the Premier League restart. Then they play Chelsea at home, Newcastle United away, and Wolves also they play away on the 27th of June. So that's quite an action-packed week, action-packed 10 days for them. Against some difficult sides. They didn't enter, they're not entering this period. I know you can't say anyone's in good form because it's been so long since Premier League, a ball's kicked. But, you know, there's not a great deal of confidence, I imagine, going around the Villa camp at the minute, Benji. 25 points, 2 points away from safety. With those games to come, Sheffield United, Chelsea, Newcastle and Wolves, they have got some talented players, obviously, but do you see them kind of suffering the same similar fate to Norwich this season?
Well, if John McGinn is returning for them, that could be a very crucial factor because I think Villa were doing okay with him in the squad. I think he was their best player by a margin, and he got injured, long term, but him coming back would do wonders for Villa. But the thing is, it has been a lacklustre season for them because they spend £170 million. They essentially did what Fulham did last season and spent a lot of money winning the playoff final. And it hasn't worked out. And with the money they spent and what they've done, they should be higher up the table. And yeah, it's very disappointing to see this. I personally hope Villa survive as one of like the former established Premier League teams. I like to see them in the league. But yeah, there are difficult fixtures as you mentioned, and while I don't think it's insurmountable, I think it will be very hard with teams like Watford with Nigel Pearson who looks like they were going to stay up before the break. And with a 3-0 win against Liverpool and Pearson's experience, I think Watford will be safe and that might hurt Villa.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Matt, you made a really good point there, Benji, about the idea of John McGinn coming back. That's one thing I think that the lockdown
will benefit certain sides who've had kind of long-term injuries and players of McGinn's quality. Granted, you know, his style of football is very much in your face, getting stuck in. Whether he'll be of the same intensity as a result of his injury and as a result of kind of the climate in which the game will be played, I'm not sure, but certainly be beneficial to Villa to have him back in the side. And Benji touched upon Watford there, Jez. I'm going to turn to you now in terms of themselves and Bournemouth. Bournemouth currently in 18th place. They are on 27 points. Watford in 17th place. Same amount of points, but they're just ahead of Bournemouth on goal difference. These are two sides that Liverpool played just before the postponement of the season. They lost to Watford at Vicarage Road, but then beat Bournemouth narrowly at Anfield. Both of these teams seem, prior to... This is the difficulty when you talk about form and momentum. No side has it. You're kind of judging them about football that they played 2 or 3 months ago. But before the pandemic came into place, both of these sides seemed to be gaining a little bit more momentum. Who do you think out of those two teams are kind of best suited? Firstly, best suited for survival, especially in this kind of environment that we're in.
Watford. Very simply, in my mind, it's Watford, because Pearson has been in this situation before with Leicester. He has been able to dig a team out of the bear trap that is the relegation hole, and he's got a squad that, whilst it's old, whilst it's crumbling, it has enough talent in there that they can get themselves out of it. I think, you know, you talk about the injuries, and I know, well, when we get to the top half, as players, certainly that I know Ben wants to talk to, especially at Spurs, that have come back from injury in this time, and you know, also Rashford at United. But for Watford, I'm pretty sure De La Feo's now back. So that's considering he got injured in that Liverpool game, that would have been him out for the season. So along with that, they've also got, we'll say for argument's sake, that Deeney does play, because at the moment it looks like it, you know, anything could happen between now and the game starting, but we'll work on the assumption that he is. So he's a talismanic figure for them. Obviously, Ismail Assar, who has proved some of his early doubts as wrong, blew away a lot of his critics with his performance against Liverpool. And they have got fundamentally a good defensive setup, which when you give it to a manager like Pearson, who is a bit of an old-fashioned manager, I think they'll be fine. Whilst with Bournemouth, in a way, I think Bournemouth are incredibly lucky that could have been helped by the virus, and looking for silver linings here where there really shouldn't be any. But they were on a slide, and they were, in my opinion, certainly going to go down, because Bournemouth have always depended on basically being an attack-first team, couldn't really organise much of a defence. That's why I think when we did that quiz, quite a few was thought that they'd score the most own goals. They were last season ridiculously dependent on Simon Fraser, who this year has come out to the press and said that all that attention he got in the summer let his head turn. He hasn't really got down focusing until about 2 weeks before we went into lockdown. So if he's backfiring, I can see him having a bit of a chance. But I think Bournemouth have sort of have run the race once too many times. I think this time they are going down.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting for them and Watford. I think yourself and Benji made the point there about Nigel Pearson's experience in these kind of dogfights. I think that's going to be really, really crucial. And Matt made a little point earlier about the idea of set pieces and defensive structures being a little bit more fragile in this kind of environment. I'm sure that Nigel Pearson will be one manager will be making sure his defence is watertight ahead of the return. There are two other clubs that I think, though, can't be ruled out of slipping into the relegation zone, especially because of the fixtures that they have left to play, and that is West Ham and Brighton. West Ham are currently on the same amount of points as Bournemouth and Watford. They're on 27 points. West Ham are in 16th place in the Premier League. West Ham's fixtures of the next three are Wolves at home, Tottenham away, and Chelsea at home, which is a difficult three to welcome them back to Premier League football. Brighton, they're on 29 points. They've got a little bit of a two-point cushion, I should say, but their fixtures are difficult as well. They've got Arsenal at home, then they play Leicester away and Man United at home, all in a 10-day period. However, they do have a much more superior goal difference, so it's a effectively a 3-point gap that they've got. Matt, with those fixtures, do you think West Ham and Brighton are going to be pulled even further into the mix than what they are now?
I think so. I think I think Brighton have got a better chance of surviving than West Ham. I could see West Ham getting involved in a real scrap for relegation, to be honest. I know, obviously, form's not everything, but there have been a lot of concerns about West Ham all season in terms of their team, especially with doubts over the futures of players like Declan Rice, who seems set to move to pretty much everywhere. Chelsea, I think, seems to be the front runner. They've got an absolute coup in signing Timo. So, I think West Ham could be in trouble. I can see them getting involved in a dog scrap. There's always been something quite fragile about them this season. They've had a sort of tendency to collapse, like to either, you know, only come back when they're about 4-0 down or to throw away leads. I think it might be a match against Tottenham where they threw away a lead. I think that West Ham are a bit mentally fragile, and on that basis, I could see them collapsing and going down.
Yeah, it's going to be definitely interesting to see how David Moyes' side do in this environment. Okay, then, lads, the big question: which three teams then are being relegated from the Premier League in this restart period? I'm going to go to you, Benji, first. Which three teams do you think are going to make the drop?
Well, definitely Norwich City. Bournemouth, I agree with Jez. I think I'm going to be bold here. I'm hoping Villa can climb out of it, and I'm going to go with Brighton going down because that's sort of come out of nowhere. But I think their 2020 form, I know form is a bit irrelevant now, but like to have not won a game and the drastic change we saw with how Brighton might address their fixtures, and like they were on a good run in 2019, but then they just stopped playing. It didn't look good at all. To be interesting, I'm going to say Norwich, Bournemouth, and Brighton, okay, with Villa narrowly escaping.
Interesting shout, Jez. What's your opinion?
Just adding on quickly to what Matt said, I think West Ham are certainly going to be in the mix. I mean, when I think one thing that will have hurt the players' mentality quite a bit is I think one thing that will certainly hurt their mentality will be the fact that when you've got your own chairwoman in Karen Brady so desperate to try and have the league null and void, that doesn't really strike me as there being a huge amount of confidence from the club in their players' ability, which I wouldn't want to be a part of, because...
There were similar noises coming out of Brighton, weren't there?
Yeah, well, I think they were worried. I had forgotten about that, actually. I think Glenn Murray was voicing some of his concerns the other day to the BBC.
Thing is, it's David Moyes, and I don't know. I still think Moyes has, although like he's relatively in the past now, I still reckon Moyes has the ability to... help West Ham through this, and I know they have very hard fixtures, but yeah, I think West Ham just about have enough quality to stay up.
Yeah, and I agree with Benji on that, because I remember when Liverpool played them at the Olympic Stadium. Well, I think though, fortunately for West Ham, there are three teams that are worse in the league that will go down, so I'm going to probably say that it's Norwich, Villa. I sort of feel that Villa will maybe be the team. I think Norwich will unfortunately be down, and then I think it's going to be Villa and Bournemouth, and I think those two, that it might go down to the last couple of match weeks, with West Ham sort of hovering worryingly near, and then they'll get one fortunate win which keeps them up.
Matt?
I'm going to go for Norwich, Villa and West Ham. I think that Bournemouth are going to pull something out of the bag. I think that the break would have benefited them. I think it would have given them a bit of time to reset and Eddie Howe to get his act together and sort of say, right, guys, we really need to do this. And I think they have got, we forget, you know, they've got some really high quality players at Bournemouth. And we forget that, yes, they've been woeful this season, but that's on current form. And we remember how good they've been in the last couple of years and how much they've challenged top teams. So I think they can do a job. And I think that Bournemouth are the most likely out of, well, basically, I think Norwich are down. I think we're pretty unanimous on that. But I think out of the two, Bournemouth and Villa, I think Bournemouth are more likely to get out of the relegation, out of the relegation zone, personally.
Go on, Jim, sorry.
I was just going to say that, I mean, I do like Eddie Howe a lot. And I think if he, and I think Matt and I, we talked about how we think it is a good Bournemouth squad. It's a squad which I think a lot of neutrals get behind. I mean, if they can pull this off, I think it will actually give Eddie Howe quite a bit more substance to the critics which he's had, although extenuating times, what have you.
Callum might finally forgive him. I think I agree with Matt there. I know the host is meant to remain impartial, but I also think Norwich, Aston Villa and West Ham will be relegated. Going to be really interesting at the bottom. I think we're all in agreement that whoever goes down, it's going to be a very tight and interesting race there. If we move quite considerably up the table now, kind of the next, arguably the other area of real interest is in regards to Champions League qualification. Excuse me, as it stands, Chelsea are fourth in the Premier League table at the minute with 48 points. They're closely followed by Man United on 45. And then you've got Wolves and Sheffield United, who are both on 43 points. Sheffield United, in fact, have a game in hand. They're in seventh place, Wolves in sixth. Now, with in a kind of prior to what I'm about to talk about, I think you'd probably say Chelsea and Man United are kind of in the key positions. They're vying for that final Champions League spot. But crucially this week, Manchester City, their hearing in regards to their two-year European ban is taking place. Now, this could result in the team which finishes fifth qualifying for Champions League football. And as it stands, Manchester United occupy that fifth spot. Jez, I'll turn to you here. Firstly, taking that Manchester City news out of the equation, if we're looking at it from a kind of traditional top four point of view, which of those four clubs that I kind of mentioned there do you think I've got the best chance of getting into that top four? Chelsea's fixture list includes Aston Villa and Leicester away. Man United have got to go to Spurs, and they've also got to go to West Ham. And Wolves have got probably the nicer set of fixtures. I think it's fair to say they've got a decent run of it. Which of those teams do you think is in the best position to kind of get into the top four? And also, kind of your thoughts on the Manchester City news itself, and what do you think the outcome will be, and the effect that's going to have on Champions League qualification in this country? I know that's an extremely long question.
Yeah.
Forgive me.
Don't worry, I'm used to giving the extremely long answers, so it's fine. It's really tough to call the top four. And I think that if the top four race hadn't been this open, I think actually there would have been possibly a bit more of a call here in the UK for the season to have just ended as is. That's one thing which I think could be argued. And obviously, that's for another time and we won't discuss it. The season is playing out and that's how it stands. If you'd asked me, if this had been sort of the Chelsea team that we're possibly going to see next season, I'd have probably said Chelsea straight away, because it looks like they have strengthened with two very good acquisitions in the off window. You know, we saw Hakim Ziyech was agreed in February, and now Timo Werner, much to my annoyance, has chosen Chelsea over Liverpool due to what's seemingly financial reasons due to wages. So my gut instinct would be to sort of think but do Chelsea at the moment have enough firepower to get there? And I'm not entirely convinced. I think if I took Chelsea's best starting lineup and compared it against Manchester United's best starting lineup, with Rashford coming back into the team on top of Bruno Fernandes, who obviously been sensational when he'd been in the side, my inclination would be to say that Man United will finish ahead of Chelsea, much as it absolutely pains me to say, because I think pound for pound they have a better squad in sort of certain key areas, which I think unfortunately will give them the edge. And then it's then a question of can any of the... So I'd expect United to finish ahead of Chelsea, and then, you know, could Leicester slip up? It's possible. They were on a bit of a slump of their run of form, but they might have been re-energised. Rodgers obviously has come out and has actually been very open about the fact that he did have COVID-19. I don't know, because I feel very bad for Wolves at this point, because Wolves I tipped to get into the top four, but I think actually the break will have damaged them a little bit. They might be keeping one eye open, though, on what happens with the Europa League. I think they have a stronger chance of winning the Europa League than they do of finishing the top four. And then it's a question of the wild card in the pack, which is Sheffield. But I think for Sheffield, if they can maintain where they are and finish within the top eight bracket, and I'd say top eight, I'm going to have to unfortunately draw Tottenham into the equation here, because they are now going to have a fully fit Kane. We've seen him back in training. Son's back from military service as well as everything. It's a really open 10-game running. And if this was a normal end of the season and, you know, we had these squads now, this would be getting sort of all the coverage left, right and centre because of how intense it is. And it's a really great thing to play for. If I had to pick my top four, it's one of Liverpool and City in the top two. And then I'm going to say, and I feel a bit bold saying this, but I'm going to say United in third, and I think then actually Leicester in fourth, and Chelsea just dropping to fifth.
Well, Rashford's back, isn't he?
That's the big thing, I think, yeah. As for the Man City thing, very quickly, I mean, the expectation seems to be that the ban will be cut from 2 years down to one. It seems to be almost expected whether that ban's going to come in next season or the season after. We don't yet know. But the thing which I think has been keeping a lot of people on edge is that Man City, ever since this was announced, have been so almost blasé about it, saying, yeah, we know this was coming, but don't worry, it's not going to last. It's not going to stick. We've got a way of dealing with it, which makes me rather curious as to what they're going to suddenly produce in CAS for when in the course of arbitration sport when it comes to that, what they're going to pull out of the bag. Is it going to be a huge amount of money, or is it going to be some fantastic evidence that proves they're innocent? I don't know.
They have a plan.
Yeah, they do. But yeah, my gut instinct will be that it will be a 1 year ban.
Yeah, and that will certainly have really interesting ramifications on. It'd be interesting to see whether, how is it, am I right in saying, will we find out the results of the hearing kind of on the day of the hearing, or will it kind of filter through in the next couple of weeks? Because it'd be interesting if clubs know that fifth place is a Champions League spot before football starts again, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I don't know. I think, unfortunately, Callum would probably be the one that would have the most info for us. I think from what I've gathered, the hearing will start over the weekend. I don't know if it will be completed. I think it will be at least something which I'd expect to run on. I would personally, for something this big, and it is big, let's not beat about the bush here. This is, you know, one of the wealthiest teams in the world, and also one of the top teams in the first, I want to call it a show trial, because I think that's what it kind of is for UEFA to really assert their authority. This is going to be something which the CAS are going to have to get right. So if it takes a day, I will be very surprised. I'd expect this would be something that rumbles on for possibly a week, if not more. I wouldn't be surprised if this goes on for 2 weeks. I don't know on that. Yeah.
Yet another kind of really interesting dynamic in that top four race, the whole Manchester City court hearing situation. Benji, as someone who's kind of used to top four run-ins, I'm afraid to say that you're not going to be involved in it this year, but from your experience of it, who do you think is going to make those Champions League places?
Yeah, it really does pain me to say this, but and I am in denial about it, but I do think United have what it takes, because I've seen they had a great run of form, and despite the idea of Liverpool winning the league, United really, really wanted the season to continue, and I do feel that they'd finally got something together, and their quality is better than Chelsea's, especially now in attack. Rashford's coming back, and Bruno Fernandes, in his five games, that merited a team of the season place.
That's another podcast. That's another podcast.
Yeah. But you do mention Wolves run in, but yeah, I think the Europa League, will distract them. I do think that you can't rule out Spurs and Mourinho, because I do think that now Son and Kane are back, that is monumental for Tottenham. I think the way they were going, if the season had ended in May, they would have finished maybe 10th, but this is a game changer. It will certainly put them up there. I do think Leicester were in a bit of a slump, and yeah, I'm more inclined to agree with Jez. But like, to be honest, it's the hope that kills you as an Arsenal fan. I do want to think that we could finish 5th to salvage our season in a way. If we could, we won't. But like, yeah, it's just if it is a Champions League place, then I think that's the best we can do. Otherwise, no, we're not in it, and I'm a bit. It's a bit of a deluded argument. So yeah, I'm gonna go with Man United in 3rd and Leicester in 4th and Chelsea in 5th. Like Jez, I think that's a good one.
I think so. Matt, are you similar in that?
I'm quite similar. Yeah, the point I'd like to make is with regards to Chelsea, I think some seeds of discontent have been sowed behind the scenes there. When you look at obviously Callum Hudson-Odoi being arrested on suspicion of rape, which is not going to, not going to enhance team morale, is it? N'Golo Kante's obviously had some reservations about training as well. So I think that those factors are going to influence how Chelsea play, because you can't, those aren't going to influence you in a positive way, are they, realistically?
Sorry, also Werner coming in as well will have disrupted Tammy Abraham.
Exactly. So now Abraham's thinking, crikey, I really got to get some goals here, otherwise I'm toast, as it were. So I think I agree that United are moving in the right direction. I think Bruno Fernandes, as much hype as he gets, he is probably the best signing they've made for quite a few years now, because he is actually, he only had a few games before the lockdown, but he does seem to be the real deal. When you look at his sort of consistency of the last couple of years in Portugal, it does appear that he is somebody who creates goals on a regular basis, and that is obviously what United need. Somebody to pull the strings in the midfield. I mean, realistically, Paul Pogba. If Paul Pogba doesn't go in the summer, I'd be quite surprised. He's had his first dinner. He's off.
I was wondering whether that turn of phrase was going to make a return, but I think the only kind of final point I'd make about this top four race is Benji made a really good point about Man United. About them not wanting the season to end, because I think in a normal Premier League season, from where they finished in March, I think they probably would have made the top four with the momentum which they had, and with Bruno Fernandes, the effect that he was having as well.
I think Rashford being back is...
When you
look at their sort of, on paper, I know obviously there's been issues over form and whatever, but when you actually look at their strikers now and you think sort of Martial, Rashford, and Greenwood, I think, is going to be top draw.
Yeah.
I saw an interview with Jesse Lingard. Jesse Lingard doesn't even know which foot Mason Greenwood plays with.
None of them do. It's amazing.
I think we've shown Sheffield United a bit of disrespect here, but it is very unlikely. I would love for them to.
I think though, Benji, what I was just saying about Man United, and you made a point. I think a lot of teams are kind of, they want to finish the season the way that they started it, as in like they want to carry on from where they left off and kind of do what they intended to do before the lockdown was kind of imposed and the postponement of the season happened. So you look at Sheffield United, for example. I mean, they were all set for European football, and I think you're right. I think it's a bit disrespectful to kind of forget them. I'm not sure they're going to get the top four, but certainly Europa League football definitely has potential. But I think
especially if City are excluded.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be really, really interesting, because it's teams with as opposed to the relegation battle, where I think it's a lot of teams who will be worried about what other teams are doing. I think in this top four, top five race, there's a lot of teams who will kind of back themselves. So that's going to be really interesting. And the final kind of point that I wanted to come on to is they have played 29 games this season. They have won 27 of them and have 82 points. Their first game back is a Merseyside derby, which potentially might not be at Goodison Park. Their opponents, Everton, have not beaten them in all competitions since 2010. They only require 6 more points to win the Premier League title, and they have no distractions of other competitions, having been knocked out of the Champions League by Atletico Madrid and the FA Cup by Chelsea. Jez, my question to you is, why are Liverpool not going to win the league?
I can tell you were building that whole thing for something like that. Oh, what is it, 6 points?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't like it. We're also working on the assumption here that City don't drop any more now. And given their running is the easier of the two teams, I can definitely. There's only one game I look at in there that I thought for pre-lockdown that I thought City could drop points in from now until the end at this point. And sadly, that wasn't including Arsenal. I just had a horrible feeling that...
My eyes lit up there.
Sadly, I wasn't... Well, I don't know. Unless Arteta can pull something, I think Arsenal and Liverpool are the last two chances that there are for City to drop points, I feel. I mean, when I say that I felt drop points, I did feel that Wolves and Palace are two teams that City, for some reason, have problems with and struggle with. So I'd hoped that with those, but yeah, I don't know, and it's probably because I've been stung too many times with Liverpool's fallen title charges at the very end, which is probably why I'm not too confident. Well, I say not too. I think it's not going to be. Everyone's sort of saying that as if the title's already won and done. It isn't. There are still 6 points needed for Liverpool to get it over the line, which is the point. And I don't quite think it's going to be the glorious sort of waltz into the title that everyone seems to assume it was going to be. You know, breaking records, etc. If they break the Centurion's mark, that will be very impressive. I think regardless, I know there's been so many talks of saying, this season would go down with an asterisk next to the title that it's won. I think actually it's going to go down as a pretty historic season because of this. So to have, the historic season and then the winner of it in that bracket is something that is pretty memorable. I just think that there's going to be something. And because of the fact that Liverpool play at such a high intensity and we're seeing in the Bundesliga so many muscle problems are starting to develop with players because they're playing, 2games a week every week and it's in such a rapid turnover.
6 points, Jez, out of 30.
Yeah, come on.
I was about to turn to you, Matt, there and say, on a scale of 1 to 10, how ridiculous is Jez being?
To make absolutely 100% sure, they need 6 points out of 30.
I know.
And that's assuming City don't drop any points. And obviously...
Including the clash against when the two teams play against each other.
They're going to run of 10 consecutive victories after a lockdown. We'll be in 11, sorry, because they've got a game in hand, haven't they?
Yeah, so City have a game in hand.
Yeah, that's one thing. City would have to go on a run of 11 consecutive victories and Liverpool have to get 5 points or less. I mean, the odds are incontestable.
Yeah, it's stupid odds. But what I'm probably getting to here is I don't think that Liverpool will be crowned champions within the first 4 games, at least. I can just see it keep rolling on, and then it's then a question of what happens after that. That's why I'm wrong. I really hope I'm wrong.
I appreciate it hasn't happened for 30 years, but Jez, come on. I mean, you've won 27 games out of 29, and you said it would also be lucky if you broke the Centurion's mark, but that's like 18 points out of 27, which Liverpool have basically smashed. That would be disappointing for Liverpool to not smash the Centurions, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't think it's going to be quite as sort of amazing as everyone thinks it's going to be if they win it.
I don't think you'll necessarily get Centurions, but
but that's 18 points.
I will swim in the Highfield Lake naked if Liverpool don't win the league. I'm that confident.
That is the soundbite. That's the fun. That's the name of the podcast. That's the name of the podcast.
Cracker.
I think the odds are very much in Liverpool's favour. I mean, Benji, your final kind of assessment of that. I mean, Liverpool are surely going to do it, aren't they?
I mean, yeah, they.
if they didn't do it, then Liverpool will never win the league in my lifetime. Literally, this is they've done it. I mean, 6 points out of 30, that is ridiculous. I mean, I do think I can understand Jez's point of view. Maybe they won't get as many points as you think they'd have accumulated, but I do think that they'll beat City Centurions narrowly. I do think that like they'll get past the 100 mark because they are on course to do that, and maybe they lose the City game, but otherwise I think that you should have more faith in your side. I think it was a good time for Liverpool to break because of the form.
That's true.
I think you'd have had time to recuperate and think about these losses and how you're going to go about them. And yeah, so I do. My prediction is Liverpool maybe 102, 103 points, something like that.
If there are going to be wins for it, that Liverpool get these sorts of wins that take it over the line, it might not be the Merseyside derby, even though that can very easily be a draw. I don't think it'll be the City game. I think it'll sort of be cagey one goal sort of, well, you know, 2-1s or 1-0s that Liverpool sort of get that just sort of push them over the line. And that's something which, in all fairness, the side had been showing it could do. It might be, but I don't think it's going to be quite the sort of amazing triumph everyone was thinking it was going to be.
And Matt, as the supporter of a club that has won the league this season, would you agree Liverpool are surely going to do it, yeah?
I mean, I refer you back to my previous statement. But about the about Highfields Lake, yeah. I mean, I just can't see Liverpool not getting 6 points, and City also winning 11 games in a row. I can't see that happening. I think that's pretty much nigh impossible, and I think it'll be very anticlimactic because I think that Liverpool probably like. I don't know, they'll probably get like, I reckon Liverpool will get a couple of draws and a win in like the first 4 or 5 games, and then City will draw a game or something, and then as a result, Liverpool win the league, win like City draw a game somewhere, and it'll be a bit like, everyone will just be in the room and it'll be a pound switch, like, woo! And then look around and realise they've got nobody to go to the pub.
Well, that's kind of what I mean, in that it's going to be an anticlimactic finish, but I think you'll just be sort of a national sigh of relief when that happens.
Well,
from Liverpool fans.
What will happen is Arsenal will beat Man City on that Wednesday, and then Liverpool will win the next game and be champions.
Do you know what the beauty of doing a podcast on Zoom, though, is the fact that every time myself, Benji, or Matt says, "Oh, Liverpool are clearly going to do it. Clearly do it." You see Jez's face get increasingly more worried, as in, like, "Don't say that. Please don't say that. You're going to curse. You're going to curse."
The thing is, I can see you though, James. There's a glint in your eyes. It's obviously going to happen, isn't it?
Just keep going.
Yeah. I mean, it will be if you chuck this away, then Liverpool will never win the title again.
I'd accept that. Yeah. I'd accept that in the sense of, well, we just don't deserve it.
Yeah. it's certainly going to be interesting to see what it's like when Liverpool come back. Will they adjust to their normal selves, or will it be slightly more? Will they struggle to readjust? I think the final question then I've got for all three of our panel, because obviously there's so many different changes that are going to be going on in terms of league positions. I imagine are going to shift over the next couple of weeks. There's a lot of football going to be played. It's intense. It's all there to be watched for free on multiple different channels. I suppose, Matt, I'll go to you first. Are you excited?
Yeah.
Benji?
I'm very excited until Aguero scores in the first minute, and that's what happens. That's the story of Arsenal.
And Jez?
Yeah, we all need football back.
Yeah. It's certainly going to be interesting anyway, and of course UN Sport will be all over it. I imagine what we'll try to do is kind of at the end of each kind of round of matches, we'll do a little bit of a kind of a review podcast as well, going through all the games, because they're there to watch as well, and it will mean it'd be
be a welcome break from, you'll go from binging Netflix box sets to now binging football again, which is the way it should be. But thank you very much, gents, for joining us. Thank you, everyone, for listening at home. My big thanks to Benji, Jez and Matt for joining us here on the Premier League show podcast. Like I said, we'll try and do a few more of these over the next few weeks as football returns. But in the meantime, stay safe and keep listening to URN in the lockdown.